Thank you, Sonia. Just get comfortable on it. Any of you ever think that we'd be talking about expectations in the lounge? And in the lounge, this is the lounge of the plaza. Come in, lady.
We decided we expected heavy work to get over our kitchen.
Okay, great. Well, we're just delighted to have you. Thank you, ma'am. I was just telling the ladies that did you ever think that you'd be talking about expectations in the lounge? And so you never know what to expect, do you? It's a delight to be here, and I've heard that you've been really having a good time and all the fun things that you did yesterday, and it sounds like you got a lot of fun things this afternoon planned, too. And I think that I hope the weather will hold out for you. I think it will, and maybe we'll wait to rain later this evening. But we were talking about the 40 years, and also I heard another lady talk about her grandchild, and aren't they a blessing, our grandchildren? And as I think about 40 years of marriage, I was 18, and my husband was 20 when we got married. And when you think about the more I counsel, and I see, I'm so grateful to the Lord that our marriage is lasting. When I think about it, and I think expectations has a lot to do with our everyday just relationships. And so I'm excited about talking about that theme. And I want you to think back as we talk about expectations. What are some of the expectations that have been in your life in the past? And then what's going on in your life right now? I'm sure as you ladies came, even 2 or 3 days ago, you were thinking about an expectation of what you were packing. You know, what are the people going to be like? Maybe you'd never been to the home office before. You know, are you going to fit in? Or are the ladies going to like you? Or are you going to like them? And we have expectations every day, don't we? There's just something you wake up with. You have an expectation of what the day is going to be like. So I hope I can share with you some things of what expectations are, what are some of the emotions that arise in us when our expectations are not met, and then what do we do about some of these expectations? How can we really work through them, and what's involved in working through them? I hope also to have a question and answer, leave a little bit of time afterwards, and which will be helpful to us. But when you think about expectations, what comes to your mind when you think about an expectation? And I looked this up, and it means to take or to receive from, to wait or to expect. So it's something that you may not know right at the time when you have an expectation, but it's something to wait or to expect, to reach out in readiness to receive something. It's a strained expectancy. It's a stretching forth of the hand or the head. It's something to look forward to. So an expectation isn't something that you know the answer right at the moment. But what we do in many times is we have an expectation of what we think a situation or a person is going to be like. And then we're going to go into some of the emotions that come forth when that expectation is not met. And you know, ladies, from just as a small child, you've had expectations whether you've been aware of it or not. And as we grow up, every one of us have basic needs. And what happens is, expectations in our life, even from a little girl, exercise a very basic impact in our lives, and they really affect all your relationships. When you look back, every relationship you had has been affected because of some type of expectation, even as you were just a baby and a little girl and as you moved on up in life. And so they're really the tangible and intangible things that we have been led to believe. And there's several things that happen when your expectations are met. These three things surface. They produce anticipation, they produce fulfillment, and they produce completeness. And that's great when our expectations are met, aren't they? But what about, what are some of the things that are produced when expectations are not met? They produce disappointment. And probably all of you, we could go around the room and you could share something that's been produced in your life because an expectation was not met. What about disillusionment? When, you know, how many times you've made the statement, I just can't believe that this happened to me. When we think of the Hurricane Andrew and all the things that happened down there, and if you listen to the TV at all, you've heard a lot of disillusionment. And you've heard different stories, and one little couple said, why was it so bad? You know, she expected it to be bad, but she was disillusioned because she never dreamed it was going to be as bad as it was. Have you ever thought that, if a situation's happened? What about frustration? That's also another area that comes in. And then, so what happens is, expectations, by the very nature, demand fulfillment. When you have an expectation, you have an idea of how that expectation is going to be fulfilled. We have reasonable expectations, and what happens, they can produce a healthy atmosphere of spiritual and emotional growth and maturity. also, what happens is, as we grow up, as we have expectations, acceptance comes into that, because we sometimes, if our expectations are not met, then we don't feel like we're accepted. And so acceptance has a big part in that area of expectations. But so it can be reasonable or it can be unreasonable. But if it's unreasonable, how many times you go back and think, well, she expected or he expected something different of me? It also can be good or bad. And it also, that process set up many times as a young person, and that just goes back and forth over and over again. And if you aren't expected to think that you're a good person, then you go through life thinking, well, I'm just not a good person. And that forms what we call our belief system. Now, every one of us have had a belief system since you were just a little girl. And that belief system has been formed many times without you even realizing it. And we're two-thirds subconscious and a third conscious. So think of all the activity that's been going on in your life that you aren't even aware of. But what happens is, as you go through life and that expectations are not met in your life, it starts surfacing and bringing forth a lot of that subconsciousness that's been in your life that you maybe weren't even aware of. Sometimes a thought, sometimes an event, sometimes what somebody says to somebody, and it brings forth that expectation that maybe subconsciously you weren't aware of it. And I hope today I can help you bring some of that out to help you in that area. But as you think about expectations, think about your own life for a minute. What has been some of your expectations? Maybe when you got married, you were sure that you had an expectation that that husband was going to be just exactly the way you thought he was before you married him. Did that expectation change after you married him? Maybe it went vice versa. I see a lot of heads going up and down. What about when you had children? Did you have an expectation that that child would always be there to be obedient? And no matter what you asked him to do, he or she would always be willing to do it. That's an expectation, isn't it? What happens as they got into their teenage years? And probably all of us have a story of what our expectations changed when those kids did not do or perform the way we thought they were going to. What are some of the emotions that started or have surfaced in you? What about maybe when you had that grandchild and you thought that you'd have more time to be with that grandchild, and maybe your daughter-in-law or your son-in-law didn't think that was as important as you did? There's just all kinds of expectations. What about in the area of chemicals? Maybe in the area of alcohol or drug abuse. Our oldest son got into drugs when he was in a junior in high school. That brought back a whole different expectation that we never expected. And so, and what is that? Goes back to that disillusionment, you know, that's something you never thought would happen in your family. I never thought divorce would ever happen in our family. Here we are in Christian ministry. And yet my oldest son decided he wanted a divorce. And that's very difficult because we didn't believe in divorce. We're putting marriages together, not tearing marriages apart. So that was a different expectation that we'd never had. As I grew up and had five kids, I never thought that one of them would be divorced. I'm sure you sitting here, maybe you never thought you would be divorced or that any of your children would be divorced. And so that's an expectation that was different, wasn't it? And we hear that song, Promises, Promises, Promises. And yet how many times even do we've made promises maybe, or other people have made promises to us, and they haven't worked out? Okay, now where do these expectations come from, and what are some of the emotions that surface? I've given you two sheets, and I'd like you to look at this top sheet as I go through these, because I think it'll help you to understand what are some of the things that you and I face. First of all, I want you to realize that expectations are very real. They're going to happen every day. Whether you want them to or not, doesn't matter. They're going to be here. And so what we need to realize then is there's three areas that come into our life when we have expectations. The first one is basic needs that you and I have. And as I said earlier, from a little girl, as you grew up, you have started having basic needs that needed to be met. And as a little girl, you started expecting them to be met in different ways. And so in your family, they were met in a certain way. And to you, that was very normal, wasn't it? Maybe even as a young person, maybe some of them weren't normal, and you just expected things not to work out the way that you thought they were going to be. But you started forming basic needs that you had in your life. And since you're all women, when you got married then you just thought what was expected in your family was normal. You marry somebody and he had the same idea. He thought his family expectations were normal. Then you try to put those two together And you look back and see how they work. We just think marriage is going to blend together like this, don't we? You know, we got Mr. Wonderful, and it's just going to blend together. But it doesn't work that way. Sometimes we go like this, don't we? And so it doesn't meet always the way we think. And so our expectations then, because of our needs in our family, what was normal in our family wasn't normal what we thought was in his family, or vice versa. One of the things I can remember, birthdays were just a big deal in our family. So when I married Jim, I just expected that, you know, birthdays were a big deal in his family. They didn't even remember each other's birthdays, let alone give a present or give a card or anything. And so I can remember looking back that we were kind of a very middle-class family, and I had an older brother and sister. And I can remember that whenever his birthday it was, somehow my mother saved enough money that we went out to eat from the family budget. And so it really was a big deal that on birthdays you go out to eat. Well, here I married a guy who, he couldn't even care if anybody had a birthday. So see how those expectations could be dashed? So through the years, little by little, he's realized how important birthdays are to me. And so, and they still are. And I think he's probably as much into it now as I am. But see, that's just a minor expectation. But you take a number of those and start building up, and you can see the problems that you're going to have in a relationship. So we see basic needs are a real problem in expectations that every one of us have. Now, it's not wrong. We all have basic needs that need to be met. But when we put our faith in that expectation to meet that need, it's when you're going to be disappointed. Secondly, then, is comparison. Now, I'm sure none of you here have compared yourself to any of the other women. Have you looked around and thought what you thought was just the coolest thing to wear, and then you look at another person and you think, oh, I wish, and you start comparing yourself. We start doing that, what? As just a little person. You got. I have a 7-year-old grandson, and I mean, he has certain things he's going to wear. He's already into, you know, he's going to wear what he wants to wear. It doesn't matter if it's a stylish thing to do or not. And so, but we start comparing ourselves to that other person. And we, have you noticed that we never compare ourselves to somebody who has a smaller house or less money or different kind of clothes than what we would wear? Did you notice that? It's always what somebody that we think has a little bit more, or has a little bit more expensive dress, or a little bit bigger house. And yet the Bible says that we're never to compare ourselves with another person. And that, ladies, is going to get you in trouble every time. And yet how many times, and I wondered how many times when we compare ourselves with another, if I was comparing myself to Rochelle, she may be comparing herself with me. And I don't think we ever stop to realize that sometimes. But we, women, I think particularly, are really bad in this, comparing ourselves to another person. And yet when we do, our expectations are going to be dashed, aren't they, gals? Over and over again. Then thirdly, by verbal commitments that we make to one another. Now, how many times have you talked to a friend, or maybe your spouse has made a commitment to you? I can remember when we had our fifth child, who we had four boys, and we finally got that little girl. And I thought, you know, I'm never going to get out of this house. You know, I'll never get on a schedule. It seems like you're all morning working with the kid, you know, getting them bathed and taking care of them. And I thought, I'll probably never get out again to go anywhere. And I can remember Jim saying to me, Doris, he said, once a month we're going to go out and have dinner, just the two of us. Well, you know, I don't know if we ever got to do it or not, but just him saying that to me relieved my expectations of never getting out of the house. Now, you know good and well, I would have gotten out of the house. But at that moment, as a mother with five kids, I thought, you know, I'm going to be in here forever. And it's a lot of where my thinking was at that time. And but just him saying that helped me. He gave me a verbal commitment of a change that could take place. And that was something I could look forward to and to expect. And so much of the time I find it's not whether we do some of those things, but when somebody just makes that commitment that we could do something, it changes sometimes our attitude, doesn't it? And so all the time we hear people, I think at work, people make verbal commitments to one another. Some of your husbands may come home and maybe their boss has said, you know, I'm going to put you in this slot, or I'm going to do this over here, or you may be able to get this over here, and then it didn't work out, and that's very disappointing, isn't it? It goes back to disillusionment again and disappointment. And so we see tangible and we see intangible disappointments that are happening in our life all the time. And so those things are very real, ladies. And they're things that we're faced with every day. But I want you to look on here, starting with the very first one, what happens, what emotions surface then as ladies when our expectations are not met? And what is the very first one is anger. Now, I'm sure all of you here look so pretty and have a big smile on your face, and I bet you never get angry. Well, I don't know about you, but anger has been a real problem that I've had to deal with. And I did not realize for a lot of years that anger, at the base of anger, is control. And you start asking yourself, show me when I start getting angry, ask yourself, what is it that I'm trying to control? I didn't realize I was trying to control, and I don't remember having anger after I got married. Maybe I just had everything my way, I don't know. But my anger started at my husband just teasing me. And he thought I was real cute when I was angry, so he would do things which I did not realize until many years later. He shared that in a group one night. But he would tease me about things, and then my anger would just be boiling inside. And we used to do a lot of physical, kind of slugging each other or chasing each other around and stuff, and those emotions would be churning inside of me. And what happened is I couldn't get him to quit teasing me. And so my anger, I couldn't get my way in different areas, or I couldn't get him to see things the way that I wanted him to. And so what happens, you just get more angry. And when you do then, I found that the thing that I lashed out at was usually not the thing that I'm angry about. And we as women have such a tendency to repress or suppress things. And so when you're angry, many times there'll be a lot of events that have been happening in your life that maybe you weren't even aware of or didn't seem like a big deal at the time. And so I started asking myself, now when I get angry, what is it that I'm trying to control? And then I try to trace it back. Maybe somebody said something to you and it wouldn't seem that big a deal. Maybe you went along and something else happened. But if you get at 5 or 6 events in your life that have caused anger in your life, boy, you're going to blow. And you watch that when you find yourself angry and ask yourself, what is it that I'm trying to control? And try to trace that back. You know, I don't know, as much as you want to, ladies, you can't control your husband. You know, I tried for 16 years to control him, and it didn't work. And I finally realized that I just had to release him to the Lord. I thought, if God can't change him, why on earth do I think that I can? And yet, don't we have that tendency to want to change that man? It's just kind of inbred in us as women that, you know, we see little things maybe before we get married, and we think, you know, when I get that guy, I'm going to shape him up in some of these areas. But they're not quite as easy to shape up, are they? And you know what I found that's really helped me is that when I realize that I'm not responsible for that husband, he's really God's responsibility. And I concentrate on where I am. And when I get to be the kind of wife that I should be, then I'll worry about what he's doing. And that has helped me 100% in our relationship. When I've backed off and realized that when I get to be what I need to be, then I can worry about him. And it's helped us a lot. But anger is one of the probably the most difficult emotions that you and I go through. And I'm sure some of you sitting here probably have an angry husband sometimes. In fact, I was talking to a girl on the phone last night, and she said, I was asking her about her parents. They moved up to Montana, and they had an expectation that when they get up there, the business they were in was going to go, and they just had to get out of Oklahoma. Things weren't going well. They were in real estate here. And I was talking to the daughter, and I said, how are your parents doing? And she said, not well at all. And she said, my father has never dealt with his anger. In fact, he's more angry now than he was when he lived here. Something is going to cause him to blow, and that when that anger keeps going and going and going. And I would encourage you, if you have an angry husband, and he didn't just get angry overnight, it's different things that surface. Sometimes I find as women, we get our husband are very angry, and so it comes out on us where many times they're really angry at events that happened in the early life. Some of the things that my husband is talking about today that maybe they're angry at their parents. Maybe they're angry at a mother. And so you end up getting anger taken out on you. And so that's something that you might need to consider. And sometimes if your husband is angry a lot of the time, you have to be careful what you say to him, because then you become the one they come back and you're the one that gets bombarded, when really he may be angry at the job. He may be angry at his growing up years. But you're the one that gets that. And if you can start asking yourself, what is it, and asking the Lord to show you what's causing that anger, that will help you to understand. Because many times, are they going to take the anger out at work? Are they going to take the anger out at other people most of the time? No, they're going to take the anger out on you, because you're a safe person that they know that you love them in spite of that. But if you, as a woman, get that handed at you a lot of the time, pretty soon that gets to be too much, and you emotionally cannot keep somebody when they're so angry at you. Pretty soon that starts pulling you down as a person. And so you might need to think about that. But I know a lot of men, I think that's why men die of heart attacks much younger, because they hold their emotions in, where we as women, at least we get those emotions out, don't we? Most of the time we have a friend we can talk to, or we're able to get it out and express it, where a man goes along and becomes very passive and acts like everything's fine, but inside he's got all that anger that sometime is something that's going to surface. I believe that's what happened to Cheryl at the post office, that he'd had so many disappointments and so many hurts in his life, and probably had such a poor self-image of himself, that finally he had taken rejection till he couldn't take it anymore. And so he used the wrong method in how to handle it. But that kind of a person, when they keep going, something is going to blow sooner or later if they don't get some help in that area. And so anger is a very real emotion, and we all experience it every day. And it comes out, ladies, in unresolved expectations. And when you've grown up feeling rejected and do not like yourself, and many times rejection, you will reject the other person because you're so fearful that they're going to reject you. And if you're a person who has a poor self-image, or a husband who has a poor self-image, will always take it out on the other person. A person with a poor self-image will always put it off on another person. Why? Because that way they can go off and they don't have to deal with it themselves. And so if you have a husband who feels rejection, you'll be the one that'll be getting it all the time, because he's not going to give it to his boss or to somebody else. And so it's something that needs to be worked through. You can get help in how to handle that, so you'll realize who you are as a person. And he said, I'm not going to receive that because I know I'm not the kind of person that he says I am. And but they'll do that in order to justify where they're coming from. If you don't deal with your anger, then it moves into the next emotion, which is bitterness. And bitterness, the Bible says in Hebrews 12 that bitterness says, beware that a root of bitterness and takes root in you and causes you to be defiled. And if you've ever seen anybody that's bitter, you, after a while, you start avoiding them. I used to have a friend of mine, whenever I'd see her, I used to quit asking her, you know, how's your day going, or how are things going, because she would take the next hour and I could never get to the meeting that I wanted to go to. She was so bitter on the husband who had left her. Now, rightfully so, I believe he was wrong in what he did, but she had so much bitterness that it took her several months before she was willing to start dealing with that. And when a person has so much bitterness, it's just like a cancer. It just spreads all over. And pretty soon you get to that place. You may love that person to death, but you don't want to be around them because they're so bitter. And so anger, unresolved, will move into bitterness. And then as we look at that next one is resentment. They come to the place that no matter what you talk to them about, they're going to resent it. Nothing is going to work for them. They're going to resent the family. They'll resent everything that's going on. And that resentment sometimes can be inward as well as outward. But they'll be resentful. I remember dealing with a gal several years ago whose best friend had run off with her husband. And I hurt for her. And I can't think of anything that would be worse at that time. And I told her, I said, you know, you have got to come to a place of forgiving that husband and forgiving your girlfriend. I said, see, when we don't forgive, it doesn't hurt that other person. It hurts you. And that's why that resentment and that bitterness just kept welling up. And her father kept feeding on that to her and talking about it all the time and telling her how wrong he was, which he was. But I find that when you're angry, it does not hurt the other person. It hurts you. It will hurt if you're involved in that. But eventually, it's going to come out in a lot of physical symptoms. And it's been said that in the hospitals, like Norman Hospital, the mental hospitals, it has been said that probably they could empty out 75% of the patients there if people would deal with their anger. Because anger is such a real emotion. And it moves into resentment, it moves to bitterness, and then it goes down to thinking, how can I get even? And that starts working in your mind, and so you start becoming vengeful, because then you start, if you have a person who's kind of hitting at you all the time, then pretty soon what do? We start hitting back, don't we? And we think, I'm tired of taking that all the time. And so we can see those patterns of how they go down. Eventually, you come to the place where you don't even care. And then you can eventually move into depression. In fact, a person becomes so depressed that they become completely immobilized. And then it's very difficult to get that person to start working them back through, because you can get so depressed that your body just doesn't function. Your mind may still be functioning, but your physical body just will stop. And that's when you can use the term burnout, or you can come to a place immobilized. You may want to work through things, but you can't because you become so immobilized because of what's going on in your life. Now, most of the time, ladies, we fluctuate between the anger and the bitterness and the resentment. And maybe a good expectation will happen, and we move back, and we start dealing with some of those things. You know, all of us can look back at things in our childhood and see if things that happened, and, you know, we have a lot of good things that happen, but isn't it amazing how we lock into a lot of the expectations that weren't meant? But we don't sometimes stop and think about all the neat expectations that happened in our life, do we? And we think about all the things that didn't happen that should have. I think about the little girl who was just 7 or 8 years old. And her mother said, now when we get done shopping today, we'll have an ice cream cone if you're a good girl. And so they go on during the day and they go shopping. And to a 7 or 8 year old, that's a big deal to get an ice cream cone. It may not seem anything to you and I. But then it's about 4 or 5 o'clock came on and she said, now, mother, when are we going to get our ice cream cone? And mother said, you know, we don't have time. We need to get home and get supper. You know, to us, that doesn't seem, but you know, to a 7 or 8 year old, that was their expectation. And as a little person, if you have a number of those things that are unmeant, they seem very small to us. But disappointment starts setting in, doesn't it, to that small child. I remember a girl that lived with us for a while, and she does not ever remember of having an expectation meant in her family. She said, we never took a vacation. One time, her father said, we're going to take a trip. He'd even gone as far as getting the station wagon, all the suitcases in the station wagon, and then at the last minute, something happened. And she said, I don't ever remember us ever taking a trip. Even to the point of them getting ready to pack their suitcases, and then something came up, and they didn't get to go. I remember when my husband traveled in the early years of our marriage, where he would travel a week, 1 week he'd be in, and the next week he'd be traveling. And, you know, I had all kinds of expectations when he came home. I thought, boy, you know, we're going to have this romantic evening, and, you know, I'll put the kids to bed, and all these plans that I had, and, you know, none of them ever worked out. And I would just be dashed. I can remember staying up and getting everything, the house spotless and getting everything. And, you know, the demands of the kids when he came home, the kids wanted his attention, or somebody called on the phone. And I can remember over and over again being so disappointed. And I had an expectation of all these things. And well, you know what I finally did? I just came to the place of saying, I'm not going to have an expectation. Whatever works out when he comes home is going to be okay. And that has really helped me to realize we've got to let go of those expectations. Because over and over again, well, our expectations are dashed. And that's just part of reality. Sometimes, as much as we want to meet somebody's expectations, we can't. You may want to with all your heart, but you may need to sit down with that person and say to them, you know, as much as I want to, I really had planned on doing this. Maybe you're planning on having lunch with a friend or going on a trip with a friend. And then at the last minute, you thought, I just can't go. I had a lady in yesterday who was planning a trip next weekend for 3 days. And her sister called and said, I'm coming in on Thursday, and I'll be here for like a week. And she said, well, I'd love to have you come in, but I've already got these plans made with these friends. She said, well, then I just won't come. And she said, well, you know, I want you to come, but her sister didn't call and say, what is the best time? She was going to come Thanksgiving, and she just decided to come now. So should that friend change her expectations because the sister called and said, I'm coming in? And so either she called and tried to get out of the reservations, and she couldn't. And I said, I think you need to go. I don't think you're going to help your sister if she thinks that whenever you come, you can just change all your plans. And after all, she already had that expectation of what she was going to do. And so how many times people will try to put you in a situation where you always should change your expectations of what your plans, future plans are. And I think you need to stop and say, now, wait a minute. Am I helping that person in doing that? Sometimes we don't. Because you'll know of people or friends who feel like you need to change everything because they have a different plan. And that's not going to help that person by doing that, is it? What they'll do is they go through life and people just change their plans all the time for them, so they think they can just run hopshop over people all the time. And so that means your expectations may always get dashed, but their expectations are always going to be met, aren't they? Now, sometimes it isn't always wrong, ladies, when our expectations aren't met. Sometimes there's a better plan down the road, but we don't see it. And so I think as a mother, how many times with your children have you had to change your expectations. I don't know how many times with my five when they were growing up, but all at once I had my evening planned, and one of my kids came in and says, "Mother, I need cookies for tomorrow. Can you think, remember any of those times? Or I need this done, or I need a new notebook by tomorrow," and you rush out to which store is open all night. You know, and you think of all these times that your plans are changed. Now, as a mother, sometimes that's okay, isn't it? There's going to be times when our expectations won't be met. But I believe it comes back to how you inwardly learn to handle that. And after a time, if you have a child who continually is doing that and they're not really planning ahead, you need to help that child to say, "Now, son or daughter, you know, we need to start looking ahead what some of these things the teacher tells you, so we're not running out at midnight every night getting some of these things done. If you want to move around, I know with that, it's cold in here, and so if you want to move around, I see some of you kind of cold, so feel free to do some exercise if you want to, that's fine." Some of you may be thinking of some questions that are coming up as we're going over this. But emotions are so important, and we need to realize that. I want to talk a little bit about the healing process and what are some things that we can do. How many times when you've had an expectation, you've said a couple of these things to yourself? "I can't do this all by myself." When somebody's expected you to do it, and you have in your mind, you're thinking, "There's no way I can handle this thing. There's just no way I can work through this." Or how many times have you said, "I'm powerless to do this on my own"? You realize that somebody is demanding something of you that humanly you cannot give, maybe because of where you're at or the position you're in, or maybe you're physically not well enough to do something at the time and you feel powerless because this other person is demanding something of you. It could be a husband, it could be a friend or a relative. Some of you may have mothers or mother-in-laws that you feel like demand of you at times, that you feel like sometimes this is too much. And you know, ladies, I believe that God never intended us to handle expectations on our own. I do not believe that humanly we can work through expectations on our own, because we're just one person. And so it's what expectations occur with what's going on inside of you. And that's why it's so important to learn to handle our expectations. And in the book of John, when Jesus got ready to leave, after he'd been on this earth for 33 years, and he got ready to leave, and one of his disciples said to him, "What are we going to do? You know, you've been here for 33 years meeting our expectations and telling us what to do, and what are we going to do now that you're leaving?" And Jesus' reply to him was, to the disciples, to them, he said, "I've got to leave so the Holy Spirit can come." And in 2 Corinthians, it tells us that it's the Holy Spirit that wants to meet our need. He says, "His power is perfected in our weakness." So what that's saying there is, the weaker, ladies, that you and I feel, the more powerless that you and I feel to have an expectation meant, the more then we let go of that, the more then the Lord can work through that area. But when we're trying to control it, when we're trying to hang on to it, the more you try to control that husband, I guarantee you, the farther he's going to go away from you, because he'll sense that control. A husband gets his needs met from the job. That's why it's so important for you to be behind him and be here with him. His needs are met through his position, through what he does. But as a woman, our needs are met through the husband. So when your husband is working all the time, if he's never there, you're not going to get your needs met, are you? But if we demand that they meet every need, at times what's going to happen is they can't. They're human. Why? Because they've got needs of their own. So the more we demand that they meet our individual needs, and they're not able to. Now, they probably will not say that to you, but they'll do two things. Either they'll become more passive and withdraw, and then you can't get them to talk at all, or they'll move out of the situation, and they'll either move out of the home, be gone more, or they'll become a workaholic. And how many husbands today have become workaholics? And I'm not even sure many times if men know why they become workaholics. But they feel a man who's a workaholic feels better about himself because he's working all the time. And so that he feels good about himself, because that's where his expectations, where his self-esteem is met. And yet, as a wife, we're wanting that husband there to meet a lot of needs that we have. But ladies, that's why you've got to let go of the control of that husband. And if you want your needs met, you're going to have to let go of that husband and allow God to meet those needs. And I find, as I said earlier, as I let the pressure off of Jim and gave him the freedom then to be what God wanted him to be, then I started concentrating on what I needed to be. And you know, there's a verse in Ephesians which says that a husband's to love the wife and see that the wife reverences her husband. And you know what that word reverence means? It blew my mind when I read that. Because in the Greek, it says to esteem, to praise, to admire, to prefer. And I thought, I don't always prefer Jim or admire him or esteem him. And you know what that verse showed me? Is that I needed to back off of trying to control or change him. And that's when I came to that place after 16 years of marriage when I thought, why is it that all these years I thought that I'd try to control him? And I let go of that expectation that I was going to be the one that was going to change him. If God, who is finite, who's a creature, if he can't change your husband, why do we think that we can't? Have you ever thought about that? That why we think we can, with all of our wonderful expectations, that we can change that person? We can't. But I thought, you know, there's areas of my life. When I looked at that one word, reverence, and realized it means to appraise, to admire, to esteem, to prefer. If I was preferring or admiring Jim, I wasn't going to be worrying about what was happening with me. And so I realized as I changed that, and I finally said, God, he's your man. If you can change that man after 16 years, I give you the whole go-ahead to do it. And I literally, ladies, relinquished him to the Lord. I gave every expectation I had of what I wanted him to do or what I didn't want him to do and just said, God, he's your responsibility. And you know, I did not even realize that anything had changed. I went on, and a couple weeks later, we were laying in bed one night, and I said, you know, I don't know why for so many years I thought it was my job to change you. And he said, Doris, I can tell you the exact day that you quit doing that. Man, I sat up in bed because I did not even realize, really. And what happened is evidently my attitude must have been different. But I was not aware that my attitude was. I was probably as surprised as he was. But I think what evidently I let go of some of that control. And I was not, he sensed that I was not trying to control him. And, you know, and so easy, ladies, not to want to control that other person. Because we have an expectation of what we want them to be like. And when they're not, it's so difficult to back off. Are you one of those women who are always on time and your husband's late or vice versa? And you have an expectation when somebody says, I want you there at 9 or 9:30, and you know that, you know, you have to look at your time and start getting there earlier. And you just want to, it's so hard sometimes when I want to say, you know, Jim, or, you know, you're not, we need to be leaving in a half an hour. And I just, you know, we kind of remind them. We have the expectation that it's my job to remind that person. But it isn't, is it? And we need to let go of them to realize they're a grown person and we need to maybe make a suggestion to them. But I would encourage you, ladies, on how, watch how you make your suggestions. Because I find so much of the time we come on, when we have an expectation, we're told we need to be there at a certain time and they're not, we don't think they're moving fast enough, then we kind of expect to get in there and try to help them. They don't need our help, but sometimes they need our suggestions. And so ask yourself, how do you ask them? Do you demand? You know, you better hurry up, or, you know, there you are, going late again. I had an expectation that my kids would never spill anything at the table, and I had a second boy who, it seems like every time we ate dinner, he always spilled something. I expected him to spill it. He always did every mealtime. So, and I finally thought, Doris, that God started working on me, showing, why don't you start using positiveness on him? And I just said, I'm not going to expect him to do anything at this mealtime. And you know, it's amazing how he quit spilling things. But I think subconsciously, in my voice or some way, he knew that I just expected him to do something. And so he always spilled something. And when I stopped expecting that, it was amazing how Doug quit spilling things at the table. And now he's a Green Beret and in the service and served in Saudi. And I thought, isn't that funny looking back then, that little thing that was such a big deal. I just knew every mealtime and I'd say, Doug, there you go again, spilling your milk. And what does that do? That sets up a failure syndrome, doesn't it? I just expected that. And sometimes, but I wasn't aware until after a few times, I finally realized what I was doing to him. I expected him. And when you're just expected to fail, what do? You usually fail, don't you? And when you realize, hey, I can change that pattern. I don't have to have that expectation of myself, and I don't have to have that expectation of that other person. Well, that can stop changing. Okay, now what happens, ladies, when we see these emotions that are surfacing? What happens when, as you sit here, you have an expectation of a person that has not been met? And you're sitting there and you've got hurt, you've got anger, you've got bitterness. How many times as a wife are we hurt over and over again? And I know that's a very real word, H-U-R-T, hurt. And they hurt us sometimes without even realizing it. And a lot of that goes back to an expectation. Some of you may have had an expectation when you came here. I can remember going to Dallas to a conference one time with my husband, and I had this real pretty white negligee and gown, and boy, I just thought we're going to have time together. With five kids, we never had a lot of time to be together, so I thought, boy, you know, we're going to go to this conference in Dallas, and I'll have time to spend the evening with Jim, and we're just going to have a neat time. You know, never worked out that way at all. And I can remember sitting in the hotel room, which was about as cold as it is in here, and I can remember, you know, I was sitting in the hotel room with my negligee on, and Jim was off somewhere else talking to somebody. And I thought, you know, this is just not what I expected. Isn't that over and over again how our expectations get dashed? Now, what do we do about that, woman, as that happens? Because that's just reality, isn't it? You can probably, maybe have already had a number of expectations that have been dashed just since you've been here. And one of the things I find that the Scripture teaches us in Colossians 3:13, it says, whoever has a complaint or an expectation about anything, we need to forgive that person because God in Christ has forgiven us. Now, ladies, when you come to that place and realize that God has forgiven you as a person, that it says that He died for you, that He loves you, and that He's forgiven you, then how? What right do we have not to reach out and forgive that other person? When I realize that Christ died just for me, He died for each one of you in this room, He's forgiven us, and so then what right have I not to forgive that other person? And you know, there's something about that, no matter how little that expectation is or how big, when I reach out and let go of that pride and say, God, it's not my job to change that other person. It's not, I can't change that 16-year-old son, or I can't change that 12-year-old daughter who's rebellious. I'm going to commit her to you. And I'm going to forgive her for the hurt that she's given me. And when you use that word forgiveness on them, and when I look at that scripture, it says, whoever has a complaint against anything, it doesn't say, but you think, but what about this situation? But what did he do to me over here? The lady that I told you that whose best friend had taken her husband away from her, and she had so much bitterness. Now, they were wrong, and sometimes people think, if I forgive that person, then that means it's okay what that person did to me. No, that's not what forgiveness means. Forgiveness, ladies, is for you as a person. It clears you up inside between you and the Lord, and then God is able to minister to you in a very special way. It doesn't mean that what that person said or what they did was right. Sometimes then, once we forgive a person, then you can go back and talk to that individual. And you can say to them, you know, the other day when we were out to lunch and you made this statement, I was just wondering if you could clear this up for me. Is this what you really meant about this? Do we need to change that? And so what happens is you can go to that person and you can go and ask and bring it out in the open. But if you don't deal with that first and forgive that person and get rid of the hurt and the anger, then when you do talk to that person, it just makes it that much worse. And pretty soon then you end up yelling at each other and you end up attacking each other. There's a book in I noticed that they had over there called Opposites Attack. And I don't know why as women, but we attack each other, and I think we attack our men so much of the time. And that's not the way to deal with relationships, gals. We've got to learn to come in a different way and talk to our mates. Don't ever ask your mate, why do you do a certain thing, or why haven't you done this? Because whenever you ask a why question, immediately exclamation mark goes up there, and you immediately then that other person comes back. If I said to Sonia, you know, why did you introduce me at the time you did? It may be a perfectly logical question, but to her, what that why question, what does it do? It immediately gets you on the defensive because she thinks, oh dear, I did something wrong. So what do? Then she starts justifying or wanting to come back, well, I did it this way because. And so if you do that to your mate, if you ask a why question, they're going to come back at you, because they automatically had maybe a different expectation than you did. So you need to come back and ask yourself, you know, don't say why. One of the ways that I found in talking to a husband is, I was just wondering if you thought about this. So you're not saying, I think your answer was no good, or I think you've got a dumb idea. And, or you might say, I was just wondering if you'd want to think about this, or have you thought about this? The main thing is take the attack off of the person. And that's very important when your expectations are not met. Today I was thinking, as you think about, some of you may want to go to the fair. Some of you may want to go on the tour. And yet, maybe your mate, if you're going with him, he wants to do something different than you do. Now, how are you going to work that expectation out? You both have a different expectation. And so you've got to ask yourself, now what's more important in winning, getting my expectation met, and then having him pout the whole time, or could you talk about that? Maybe you can go to the fair later on in the evening when the meeting's over. So come up with some other things that you can do. And so much of the time we get angry, don't we? Because automatically our expectations aren't met. And so come back and ask yourself, what are some different alternatives that we can use? Maybe you can take your expectation. Maybe you can take your friend or your mate's expectations and bring them together and let's look at them. Maybe you can work out both things. But start being creative in how you work through that. So first of all, when you have an expectation that's not met, the first thing is you need to forgive the other person who's hurt you. The other person whose expectation is not met. And where I said in Colossians 3:13, whoever has a complaint against anyone, we need to forgive him. If you go through life and do not forgive people, you're going to have a lot of problems. Because every day we've got to learn to forgive. We've got to learn to forgive our kids. I'll never forget the day my daughter, we were talking about something one day, and she just was real sharp. It seemed like no matter what I said, she just kind of came back with kind of a sharp remark, so I just kind of backed off and didn't say anything. She went on to do what she was doing, and later on she called about an hour later, and she said, Mother, I just want to apologize for being so sharp with you. And I just said, you're forgiven. And that was said, and I don't think we ever have had another disagreement since then. But the thing was, it was just something, she was having a bad day, and I realized that no matter what was happening, it was something else that really was another expectation in her life that day with a friend that had not been met, and she was angry about it, and so she kind of was taking it out on me. Now see, when that happens, you have a choice. You can say, well, why did you do that, or you shouldn't have done that. Just accept their forgiveness. And sometimes that's hard, isn't it? I think if we want other people to forgive, ladies, we've got to learn to be willing to forgive ourselves. It starts with us, doesn't it? Goes back to that word reverence. How we need to be the one to forgive. And sometimes you think, well, why do I always have to be the one to forgive? But doesn't somebody have to start that? And somehow I think that for the woman, God has given that woman a little extra grace. Because, ladies, it usually starts with us. I hate to say that, but it does. We're the ones that have to be willing to make the change. But I guarantee you, if you're willing, if you'll break down that pride and be willing to let your expectation go, it's amazing how you'll see the changes in that other person. And I guarantee you it'll happen every time, because I've seen it over and over again. Okay, so first of all, you forgive. You're willing to recognize and come up with some different alternatives in how you can work through things. And it's so important to realize that. And on your chart here, if you realize the prevention, where right under anger, it says you yield that expectation as an act of trust to God. In other words, you let go of getting your expectation met. And you know what I find, ladies? That many times when you let go of your expectation and you're willing to go along with that other person, later on down the line, you'll find that your expectation has also been met. And that's what happened to me when I let go of trying to change Jim, when I let go of trying to put him into a certain mold or thinking he had to do things a certain way. Because I can remember one time when we were talking about something, and in our early marriage, he said, Doris, you never will say, I'm sorry. I said, oh, I do too. But you know I didn't. And I look back and I had so much pride that no matter what he said or did, it was like I always had to have the last word. And I would manipulate enough in that relationship that I'd always make it like he was the one that was to blame. Now, deep down, I knew that I was the one that was the one that started sometimes, many times those fights. But I didn't want to admit it. And that pride was so strong that I was determined that he was going to always be the one that had to say he was sorry. And yet when he told me that and brought it to my focus, and I realized, you know, that is just prideful. I did not want to admit that I had to make a mistake. And you know where that came from? Came from that basic need that when I grew up, I had a lot of things that I wanted to ask my stepdad. And one time he made me feel like I was real stupid if you ask questions. And it was like, you should know that. Why would you be asking that? And I don't even remember. It was kind of like in my junior high or high school years. And you know what I did? I started going through life then. I didn't want to appear stupid. So I went through life, acted like I knew everything. If somebody asked me something, I'd say, oh, yeah, I know that. And I didn't know that worth anything. But I did. But I thought if you didn't know everything, you were stupid. Because that went back to a belief system and a need that I had to ask a question. And my stepdad made me feel like, I can't believe you're asking that question. And so since I didn't get that expectation met, I wasn't about to put myself out there and be vulnerable again. And so I learned to manipulate, to act like I knew everything. And so I had to let go of that pride, and sometimes that's hard for us as women, because, and that's really what it is, ladies, when we're not willing to let go of our expectation, what we're saying is my idea or my opinion is so much more important than yours. And so one of the things it says in order to prevent not getting our expectations met is to yield that expectation as an act of trust to God. And you know what I find? That many times, ladies, your expectation, your idea may be just as important or more important and a better idea than the man's. But by you being willing to let go of it, then come back in a different way. How can I come back in a different way? And it goes back, instead of asking a why question, come back maybe with a suggestion. And I find that many times when you make a suggestion to a man, he may not say, that's a great idea. But he will take your suggestion and use it later on down the line. In our ministry, I do this a lot. I'll see situations that I feel that need to be changed. And instead of going in the early years where I would just demand that that be changed, I would just make a suggestion to Jim. I see this person is just having a difficult time here. I'm wondering if something we need to do something over here. And then pretty soon, I'll see that changed. Now, he doesn't come back and pat me on the back and say, Doris, that was a wonderful suggestion. But that's okay. That's what we're to be, is to be a helpmate. And a lot of years, I was a hindermate because I hindered everything my husband wanted to do. When he had a good idea, if it wasn't my idea, I poo-pooed it. And so we need to ask ourselves, are we a hindermate or are we a helpmate? Because you know, gals, your kids are watching you. Your grandkids are watching you. And it's very important what you pass on to them. And they'll see that. And if they see that sometimes you're willing to give up a little bit, that that's okay. If this is what your grandpa wants to do, we'll go along with that idea. And they start seeing that maybe you don't always have to have your way. And sometimes that comes back more than what we realize in the area of our grandkids. And it can be scary sometimes because they're watching us. And so it is important how we portray to them our, what you believe goes back to that first one, that basic needs of what you believe is important. And probably your grandkids will listen more to you than they'll listen to the parent. And so that's why it's so important, the information that you give to them. And maybe even sharing with them some of the things that you've learned in letting go of some of your expectations. And that's very important. So we need to, the second one then is to prevent, we need to yield our expectation, and we need to forgive that other person. That's very important. I want to read something to you that I feel is very important, and it's in Isaiah, and it says, do not call to mind the former things or ponder things of the past. Behold, I will do something new. Now it will spring forth. Will you not be aware of it? I will even make a roadway in the wilderness, rivers in the desert. I want to read that to you again. It's Isaiah 43. It says, do not call to mind the former things or ponder things of the past. Behold, I will do something new. Now it will spring forth. Will you not be aware of it? It will even make a roadway in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. And you know, ladies, I find that as we give up our expectations, excuse me, and as we're willing to give those to God, you will be amazed at how God starts changing you, but he also will start changing that other person. And it's amazing. And sometimes it's just an easy thing of going before God and saying, God, make me willing to be willing to give up my idea. I have a friend who lived in Oklahoma City, and they moved to Houston, and she hated Houston. She didn't like it, and she would fly and come home to Oklahoma City every time she could. And every time we got together, all she could do is complain about how bad Houston was. And yet that's where her husband's job was. That's where he'd been sent. And it didn't have to be Houston. It could be any place. And every time we'd get together for breakfast when she came home, that's all she wanted to gripe about is Houston. I said, have you ever stopped to think that you might have a ministry there in Houston that you've never even thought about? That if you've been sent to Houston, maybe there's something you can do there that you couldn't have done in Oklahoma City. Plus, all of her family lived in Oklahoma City. And I said, you know, it's really much more fun to visit your family sometimes than to be in the same town with them. Because then, you know, they roll out the red carpet for you when you come home. Well, if you're in the same town all the time, all you think about is complain about all the things that are going on with the family. And this was a family that all kinds of things that were going on, it seemed like, in the family all the time. And I asked her, I said, I'm going to challenge you and ask you to do something. I want you to pray and ask God to make you willing to be willing to have the expectation of living in Houston instead of living in Oklahoma City. Just ask God to make you willing to be willing. You know, you're not willing now, but just ask God to make you willing to be willing. And about a month later, I got together with her, and she said, you know, I just love Houston. Well, I'm having more fun. I've met new friends. She got herself involved. And she said, I wouldn't come back to Oklahoma City if I could. And now I recently heard that they moved to Colorado Springs. So, and maybe she's having the same experience in Colorado Springs. But, you know, the very things sometimes, ladies, that we fight are the very things that are the very best for us. But as women, it's sometimes not our idea. And we have an expectation. We just thought that guy's going to be so much different, you know. But you realize that if you don't have him and you divorce him and marry somebody else, what happens? I see this happen time and time again. I work with so many women that are divorced the second and third and fourth time. Now, many times it's out of your control and it's not what you wanted. But for many times, it's women that come in that have wanted those divorces, and they'll say, you know, I'd given anything if I'd stuck with the first one. I thought he was bad. But let me tell you about the one I'm married to now. You know, and so no matter who you're married to, there's always going to be adjustments, ladies. There's always going to be expectations that are not going to be met. And turn that around. Maybe there's expectations in their life that you're not meeting. And that's what I finally had to come to realize. I'm expecting Jim to shape up in some of these areas, but maybe there's areas that I need to change in. And I had to let go of my expectations of what I thought that he ought to be. And I was demanding him to be something that he wasn't. And I think probably they demand us to be something sometimes that we're not. And so we have to come to that place of saying, God, I want to be the woman that you want me to be. I'm going to start with me. And when I get to be just that perfect person the way that I should be, then I'm going to worry about that other person. And, you know, it's amazing how I'm still working on me, and that's taken so much pressure trying to change the other person. And I would challenge you to try that with your kids. It'll work to realize that you cannot change that child. I believe the greatest thing we can do for our children is to pray for them. And before we have a question and answer, I want to share with you one answer that God did for me. And I know he can do the same for you. But when our oldest son was on drugs, that was so devastating to us. And we had worked through him and we had prayed for him and we got his friends together and talked to him about the dangers of drugs. It was in the 60s when drugs first came out and none of us were aware of what really was going on with drugs, although we just knew they weren't the right thing to do. But he came to me one day, several months after all this went on, and he said, you know, Mother, there's something I've never been able to figure out. And I said, James, what was that? And he said, I would go to those pot parties with my friends when I was a senior. And he said, I would try to get as high as those other kids, but I never could. And he said, I've never been able to figure that out. And you know, ladies, it was just as if God spoke to me in my spirit, but it was just as if he said, Doris, it's because you and Jim were praying. And during that time, I saw no change in him for a period of time. And Jim and I would pray for him while he was out, and, you know, he'd go out and he'd come in when we tell him to, but you can raise your children, but you can't control what they do when they're out, the choices they make. But I realized that those prayers back then, God did answer them. Even though at the time, I didn't see any change in him. I had no idea that he was going to those pot parties. And so, but I knew he was doing some of the wrong things that he shouldn't be doing. But it's just as if God said to me, it's because you were praying. And I really think God showed that to me to demonstrate to me the importance of prayer. That if you cannot do anything to change your child or your mate or any relative or friend, if you will pray for that individual, I guarantee you, ladies, God will change that person, but he'll also change you. Yes, we'll have expectations all the time. But God says, don't keep pondering over the things of the past. You can't change. From this moment on, ladies, we can't change anything that's happened in our life. We're only responsible for this moment. And God only gives you and I the strength for today. In Matthew 6, he says, my grace is sufficient today. He says, forgetting those things which are in the past. Let's look forward to what God has ahead for us. Yes, maybe we've had a lot of wrong expectations. Maybe we've expected somebody to be something they can't be. Maybe they expect you to be something you can't be. And we're going to have to ask them to just trust us as we work through changing. But I guarantee you, if you'll come to the place of letting go of any expectations that you have and ask God to make you willing to be willing to accept yourself and also to reach out and to accept that other person and let them be what God wants them to be, I guarantee you God will do a neat work in your life. And, you know, as I said, we can't change the past, but, boy, we got a lot of years ahead in the future. And God says, let's just trust me for today. I'm sufficient just for today. And I guarantee you, it will change you. And I can say that because I know of all the changes that have taken place in my life. I can give you story after story of how God's worked in my life. And I did not realize how much pride and anger when I was first married that I had. And maybe it was just there all the time, and getting married kind of surfaced all that. I don't know. But, and maybe I always got my way, and I didn't realize that after I was married that I need to make some changes. But my idea was that if he needs to be changed, then you work at him and be on his case until you change him. But it doesn't work, does it? And so, but it's so neat to give God the freedom to change that other person. But also realize it starts with me as he changes me. Now maybe some of you have some questions, or maybe something you can share as you've let go of an expectation, how it's worked out in your life. Do any of you have any questions or want to share anything?